I want you to imagine something for a second. Imagine you're a software developer. You have just spent months, maybe even like a full year, carefully crafting this really complex piece of software.
Right, agonizing over every single line of code.
Exactly. You're debugging late into the night, you know, optimizing the architecture to make sure it runs flawlessly. And then you suddenly realize that the most valuable part of what you just built isn't actually the code itself.
Because the code is totally disposable.
It is entirely disposable. You're basically just going to throw it away.
It completely flips the script on how we value technology. I mean, for decades, the code was the ultimate asset, right? It's the intellectual property, the trade secret you locked in a corporate vault somewhere.
Yeah.
But now we are entering an era where the code is basically just the packaging. And the real asset is, well, it's something else entirely.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at a truly paradigm-shifting concept today, drawing from a really fascinating February 2026 blog post. It's a post reflecting on a late talk interview with Chen Yuzhen, the founder of MuleRun.
Yeah, and Chen is actively building in this space. He's hitting real world walls, which really validates what theorists have been, you know, predicting for a while now.
Right. So our mission today is to explore this radical shift from permanent code to disposable software. And we're going to look at why an AI's accumulated memory of you is about to become the single most valuable asset in the entire tech world.
Because the era of mass-produced permanent software is, well, it's fracturing.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Okay.
Because when I first read through these sources, I really needed a way to visualize this shift. And traditional software kind of feels like a custom-built brick house.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Right. You hire architects, you pour a concrete foundation, you lay the bricks one by one, and that structure is meant to stand for 50 years. You maintain it, sure, you patch the roof, but the building itself is permanent.
Yeah, it's static.
But this new model of future software operates more like a pop-up tent. You pitch it for a single weekend camping trip. It perfectly serves your exact need for those 2 days. And then you just toss it away when you're done.
And to understand why that brick house is being replaced by the pop-up tent, we really have to look at the engine manufacturing the tent in the first place.
The AI itself.
Exactly. Chen makes this bold but honestly increasingly accepted statement. He argues that Claude Code is currently the strongest general agent in existence.
Which is a huge claim.
It is, but the underlying AI model has become so capable that it fundamentally alters the whole business of making software.
And the author of the blog post echoes that entirely. I mean, they detail how they don't even use Claude Code just as a side tool to write isolated scripts anymore.
Right. They're using it as a full-blown operating system.
Yeah, a general-purpose operating system. They built an entire personalized ecosystem inside it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, they use these things called hooks.
Those are the automatic triggers, right?
Exactly. They're these tiny background scripts that automatically trigger on specific events, like running a security check the very second a file is edited.
Oh.
And they also use skills, which function like reusable instruction manuals that get injected into the AI's memory the moment it hits a specific problem.
Yeah.
Plus, they deploy agent teams, where multiple AI instances are just working in parallel on different tasks at the exact same time.
And the business implication of that raw power is just severe. If the base agent is already that strong, it completely dismantles the traditional wrapper business model.
So for anyone who might not know, a wrapper is essentially when a developer takes an existing AI model, slaps a pretty user interface on top of it, and then sells it as a highly specific product.
Exactly. Like someone might sell an AI that writes real estate listings. But under the hood,
they're just routing your prompt to a major foundation model anyway.
Precisely. And those wrappers offer absolutely no permanent competitive advantage, no moat to protect the business. If the base agent can do everything natively, there is literally no reason for a consumer to buy a thin layer of interface on top of it. So the real business opportunity shifts away from wrapping the agent to building the ecosystem around it. You know, building specialized skills, creating the execution environments like secure file systems, and developing the actual marketplaces where these agents connect.
Wait, I have to challenge this logic a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the base agent, which is an AI model created by some massive tech giant, is the all-powerful core, and wrappers are dead, aren't developers who build these custom skills basically just building temporary accessories for someone else's machine?
That's a very fair point.
I mean, it feels like making a fancy steering wheel cover for a car you don't even own. The massive tech company still owns the engine. So where is the real lasting value for anyone else?
What's fascinating here is how the source actually addresses that exact vulnerability. They introduce this concept of an isomorphic architecture.
Okay, isomorphic. What does that actually mean in this context?
So the argument is that the underlying engineering structure, the form and the challenges of building these systems, is identical regardless of the agent's ultimate purpose. Yeah, whether you're building a highly technical productivity agent to optimize database queries, or a conversational companion agent designed just to talk someone through a bad day, the engineering hurdles are exactly the same.
But how does having the same architecture solve the problem of just being an accessory to the big AI models?
Because mastering that architecture is what allows you to control the cognitive layer. Both types of agents require three core pillars to function. First is context management.
Right, because an AI will hallucinate or crash if you feed it too much irrelevant data.
Exactly. You have to strictly control its information diet, what it can actually see at any given moment. Second is tool invocation. The AI needs hands and feet to operate external systems, whether that's firing off an email or querying a server.
And the third pillar.
Memory persistence. This is the connective tissue. It's the ability to preserve a nuanced understanding of the user across hundreds of different sessions over time.
Ah, okay. That memory persistence is the pivot point here. If the software ecosystem is just made of temporary pop-up tents, the thing that actually has lasting value, the thing that accumulates worth, is that memory.
Exactly.
Which brings us back to Chen's realization that code exists only to fulfill a specific momentary purpose. It's precisely generated, it executes to complete a task, and then it's completely destroyed.
And if the code is just an execution layer that gets thrown in the trash, the asset that actually persists is the cognition layer, the agent's deep understanding of its user.
He also calls this memory orchestration, right?
Yes. Imagine an agent that spends 3 months just observing your workflow. It learns your specific hesitation patterns. It notices when you delay making certain strategic decisions.
Oh, wow. So it's picking up on behavioral cues, not just direct commands.
Exactly. It learns to distinguish between what you claim you care about and what you actually prioritize based on your actions. It essentially bridges the subtle gap between the clumsy prompt you type and what you actually need it to do.
It basically functions like a top-tier executive assistant. I mean, think about it. When you have an assistant who has worked alongside you for 5 years, you do not care about the mechanical process of how they physically type an email.
Right, the typing is just the code.
Exactly. You care that they deeply understand your communication style. They know to soften the tone when dealing with a notoriously sensitive client or to be incredibly direct with your accountant. That accumulated knowledge, that intuition, that is the cognition.
And this fundamentally redefines value in the digital world. I mean, a complex script can be generated by a foundation model in 3 seconds, but understanding the nuances of a human being.
That takes actual time.
Right. Learning those hesitation patterns requires accumulated time. You cannot copy, compress, or fast track 5 years of relationship building and observation.
So the future moat isn't the proprietary code you write. The moat is the hyper-personalized understanding you've accumulated. But if that deep understanding of you is the ultimate moat, the obvious next question is how we actually acquire the specific skills to teach these agents in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, how do they learn to do the task we need?
That is where we hit a massive reality check. Mueller-Run's real-world struggles with building an agent marketplace paint a pretty stark picture.
Yeah. It is not as simple as just launching a new app store.
Not at all. The single biggest bottleneck they are facing right now is supply scarcity. The barrier to entry for creating these complex, highly reliable agent skills is just incredibly high.
Meaning, there simply aren't enough developers with the technical capability to build these sophisticated instruction packages.
Exactly. The supply just cannot scale to meet the demand. And compounding that supply issue is the fact that the traditional shelf model of e-commerce is entirely failing in this new ecosystem.
The shelf model being what we are used to like, walking down an aisle at a grocery store or scrolling through thousands of little icons on your phone, trying to find the one tool that fits your need.
Right. Browsing a massive catalog of 10,000 specialized agents is overwhelming. It's inefficient. The entry point has to shift to conversational matchmaking.
So you don't search for an app at all?
Nope. You simply state your problem in natural language to a super agent. And that super agent instantly interprets your problem and matches your need with a precise custom solution pulled from the marketplace.
But the quality control for that kind of instant matchmaking sounds, well, incredibly complex. If an AI is matching me with a piece of disposable software to, say, restructure my server, I need absolute certainty that it works.
Which is why the source points out that traditional five-star user ratings are totally useless here.
Right, because marketplaces have to rely on what they call a behavior-driven reputation system. It requires independent, objective outcome verification. Like, did the code actually compile? Did it restructure the server without corrupting the files? The rating is based on automated technical success, not just some human's opinion.
Yeah, but there's a darker side to this ecosystem. And it's something the author actually admitted was a blind spot in their own framework, the necessity of rigorous security auditing.
Oh, right. Chen's background gives him a very unique lens here.
It does. He previously founded Chaitin Tech, which is a major cybersecurity firm. So he looks at this AI revolution from the perspective of an attacker.
Which is terrifying.
It really is. He pointed out that these agent skills, the instruction packages downloaded to give your AI new abilities, could easily be injected with malicious code.
And the security implications of that are severe. The source specifically highlights the threat of a reverse shell.
Right.
And just as a quick refresher for anyone listening, a reverse shell is essentially a technique where a victim's computer is tricked into initiating a connection back to a hacker's computer. Because the victim's machine starts the conversation, it often bypasses standard firewalls.
Which leaves the door wide open.
Exactly. Once that connection is open, the attacker has a command line interface and full remote control of the machine. The idea that a helpful AI agent might download a skill to, I don't know, organize my calendar, but that skill secretly contains a reverse shell handing my laptop over to a hacker, that is a massive vulnerability. Are we really prepared to give these autonomous agents the ability to download and execute code without extreme oversight?
Your alarm is completely justified. I mean, many developers assume that sandboxing solves this problem entirely.
A sandbox being an isolated execution environment, right?
Exactly. It's a secure digital container where the AI can test code without it being able to touch your core system files. But Chen argues that relying on sandboxing is a fatal error. Auditing has to happen before the code ever reaches the execution environment.
It's like relying entirely on a secure warehouse at a shipping port. Sandboxing is taking a suspicious shipping container and locking it inside a concrete bunker after it's already inside your port's perimeter.
By then, it's too late.
Right. If something goes wrong, the threat is already inside the gates. Proper auditing means inspecting that cargo while the ship is still miles out on the water. You have to ensure the skill itself is fundamentally clean before you even discuss execution isolation.
And beyond that security bottleneck, there is also a biological style bottleneck happening inside the AI's processing architecture.
How so?
Well, how does an agent hold all of these secure skills at once without crashing from information overload? This introduces the concept of context engineering.
The context window.
Yes, the context window is the total amount of information an AI model can hold in its working memory during a single conversation. It is an agent's absolute scarcest resource.
Because every word, every token of data costs processing compute. It dilutes the AI's ability to actually focus on the primary task.
Precisely. So to manage this scarcity, developers use a layered loading mechanism. The AI doesn't just load its entire library of skills into active memory the moment you say hello.
Right. Instead, it first scans the metadata.
Yeah. Brief descriptions and tags summarizing what each skill does. Only when the AI encounters a highly specific problem does it perform a deep read, pulling that specific skill's full instructions set into its active context window.
It's like a researcher in a massive library. They don't pull every single book off the shelf and read them all simultaneously to find an answer. They scan the index cards in the catalog first, identify the one book that solves their problem, and then they only read that specific text.
And this efficiency ties into a philosophy cited from an essay by Mu Yao called The Boundaries of the Bitter Lesson.
What's the core argument there?
The argument is that the AI model's precious context window should be reserved strictly for high-level thinking and judgment. It shouldn't be wasted on brute force memorization or rigid computational tasks.
So it delegates.
Exactly. Memorizing vast amounts of data is outsourced to external databases. Rigid, rule-based tasks like checking TypeScript code for syntax errors are outsourced to traditional compiler scripts. The AI delegates the mechanics so it can focus purely on judgment.
Here's where it gets really interesting. One of Chen's colleagues used a metaphor that just perfectly captures the scale of this shift. They compared the current state of software agents to the evolution of 3D printing in industrial manufacturing.
It's such a brilliant comparison.
It really is. Because in traditional manufacturing, building a physical product or a piece of software requires massive upfront investment. You need factories, assembly lines, large development teams. And to justify those enormous costs, you have to design a product that appeals to millions of users.
But 3D printing drops the setup cost to practically zero. You load a design and you hit print.
Exactly.
And because AI agents are driving the cost of software development towards zero, the economic necessity of mass appeal just disappears. You no longer need to build a software tool for a million people. You can build a highly complex functional piece of software for 10 people, or even just for one single individual.
AI takes extreme personalization and turns it from an unimaginable luxury into basic infrastructure. The author actually discusses democratizing the executive lifestyle.
Yeah, which is wild to think about.
Historically, having a personal coach, a dedicated strategic advisor, and a team of engineers custom building software for your specific workflow, that was a privilege exclusive to billionaires. But very soon, that level of bespoke support is going to be reduced to a low monthly subscription and a smart ring.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, if we are printing custom software for an audience of one, the line between a productivity tool and an emotional tool inevitably disappears.
Because it's so tailored to you.
Right. When bespoke software stops just managing your spreadsheets and starts interacting with your daily stressors, it has to manage your psychological needs too. And this leads to perhaps the most premium part of the interview, centering on a concept called Jungianin.
Chen shared his really intense personal journey with burnout to explain this. He founded his first major company at 22, riding this massive wave of success. But later, while attempting to run two different companies simultaneously, a game company and a security firm, he hit a profound wall.
He detailed dealing with moderate anxiety, severe insomnia, and just crushing self-doubt.
And his takeaway from that dark period is encapsulated in the term Jungshin, which translates to care deeply.
And it's important to note, it doesn't just mean working long hours or applying raw intelligence. Caring deeply means looking at every single detail differently, refusing to just mechanically execute tasks.
Yeah, Chen noted that his first startup succeeded because he cared almost too much, and his second struggled because pride crept in and he stopped applying that deep care.
And the author applies this philosophy directly to the future of AI. They argue that existing AI companions fundamentally fail because they lack Jungshin.
Because current consumer AI models are mathematically optimized to be people pleasers.
Exactly. Their primary objective function is designed to make the user happy in the immediate moment, rather than truly understanding or providing what the user actually needs long term.
It really highlights the difference between a sycophant and a genuine friend. Chen shared this story about his lowest point during his burnout. A friend didn't just offer cookie-cutter comfort or platitudes. Instead, his friend physically dragged him to an internet cafe, and they just sat there playing video games together for two straight days.
That action required actual judgment and deep understanding.
So for an AI to be truly valuable, it needs to evolve into a judgment agent. It requires the capacity to offer true caring, which paradoxically means sometimes telling the user they are wrong or ignoring an immediate emotionally driven prompt to steer them toward what they actually need.
Right. Once an AI is capable enough to flawlessly manage your professional workflow and it has spent months learning your stress triggers and hesitation patterns, you naturally expect it to understand you emotionally as well.
So what does this all mean?
It means the companion economy and the agent economy are merging into the exact same revolution. The source highlights a product called Pan Pan Mao to prove the economics of this shift.
Oh yeah, Pan Pan Mao, built entirely solo by one developer in just 29 days.
Yes, 29 days. It serves a hyper-specific emotional and functional need in the extreme long tail of the market. The fact that a single developer can build and deploy a profitable agent in under a month proves that these deeply empathetic, highly capable, hyper-niche systems are economically inevitable.
And the window for recognizing this shift is closing fast. Chen pointed out the reality of the consensus window. What was considered a radical non-consensus view just a few months ago, like the idea that Claude Code would become a primary operating system, is now broadly accepted consensus.
Massive players are already moving. Anthropic shipped CoWork, ByteDance built Anygen, Google is rapidly maneuvering its infrastructure.
Windows of opportunity do not wait for latecomers. Once a visionary perspective becomes consensus, the opportunity no longer belongs to the theorists who are just thinking about it.
It belongs exclusively to the builders who actually shipped a product. The transition toward disposable software governed by cognitive moats is accelerating way faster than the traditional tech industry can track.
Let's quickly recap the scope of what we've covered today. We started with the death of permanent code and the rise of disposable software, exploring how code is becoming a temporary execution layer that just gets thrown away.
We unpacked how the vital, irreplaceable moat of the future is agent cognition, an AI's persistent memory and understanding of you.
Right. And we examined the severe security risks of building agent marketplaces, the really elegant mechanics of context engineering, and the profound necessity for AI to evolve beyond people-pleasing, to genuinely practice Yang Jin, caring deeply for the user.
It really represents a total reconstruction of the relationship between humans and machines.
The biggest takeaway is that you are no longer just a passive end user buying mass-produced software off a digital shelf. Your personality, your specific quirks, your hesitation patterns, and your unspoken needs, they are becoming the exact blueprint for your own custom disposable software ecosystem.
But this transition raises a critical question to ponder. If an AI's true, irreplaceable value becomes its deep, accumulated understanding of your psychology, your hidden hesitations, and your flaws, what happens to your ultimate privacy?
Wow.
Think about it. If that highly accurate cognitive model of your brain becomes the most valuable asset in the tech world, what happens if it is ever acquired by a data broker? Or what happens if that cognitive model is subpoenaed in a lawsuit?
Your deepest secrets wouldn't just be in your head anymore.
Exactly. They would be the foundational architecture of the software you use every single day.
We're trading the permanence and privacy of the custom-built brick house for the ultimate hyper-personalized convenience of the pop-up tent. But we really have to remember, a pop-up tent has incredibly thin walls. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.